Hello, everyone. I'm Harvey Brownstone, and today's guest is a best-selling author and internationally acclaimed filmmaker who's making her second appearance on our show. Last year, she was here with her filmmaking partner, James Gagnaire, to discuss her monumentally important, multiple award-winning movie, Land of the Free, In the Shadows, which is mobilizing people all over the world to join the battle to end the barbaric practice of trophy hunting of endangered species. Aside from her highly successful film career, she's written numerous best-selling books, including Sins of Life, which led to a trilogy of novels, and a series of children's books entitled The Magical Scarecrows, which earned her a nomination for the Pride of Australia Medal. Today, she's here to discuss her brand new novel, written for young adults, entitled Swan Song. The story is inspired by real events that occurred on the lake on our guest's property, an idyllic tropical paradise called Mermaid Waters at her home on the Gold Coast of Australia. The book tells a captivating, dramatic, and heartwarming story of a community of swans and other wildlife who endure treachery, sacrifice, and self-discovery. Here's a trailer for the book. Watch this. The book will form the basis of an animated feature film to be executive produced by Priscilla Presley and featuring the music of the Mzanzi Youth Choir of Soweto and compositions by Grammy-nominated composer Moritz Lotz. I'm delighted to welcome my dear friend, the irrepressibly prodigious and irresistible Lynn Santer to our show. Lynn, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you, Harvey, for having me on the show and for that beautiful and overly flattering introduction. Thank you.
Lynn, I must tell you that it's been a long time since I've read a book that was written for young adults, but I really enjoyed Swan Song because the plot is riveting and there are some important themes there about family, loyalty, and what it means to be part of a community. Tell us why you wrote the book.
As you said, I live on the lake, which is photoed behind me. That is actually the lake that I live on. It's Sunrise. And I've lived here for 23 years. And in 2018, after over a decade of absolute tranquility and harmony and getting to know all of the animals by individual name, rank and personality, if you like, a very, very aggressive swan moved into the territory that was actually brought here by the daughter of the couple that had reigned on the lake for about 15 years at that time. And it started a chain of events that were terribly distressing and very dramatic, and the local law wasn't particularly helpful. And I started blogging about it on my social media, and my followers around the world became absolutely hooked with what was happening. And to the point where if I didn't put a post up, I had people actually phoning me saying, you know, what's happening? How are they? What's going on? And so for years after the saga played out, which took quite some time, people said to me, you have to turn this into a film. You have to write a book about it. And it took me a long time to get my head around how I would put this into a consumable format for people who knew nothing about what had actually happened. But all of a sudden, last year, the light bulb went on. I said, I know exactly how I'm going to tell this story now. And while it will be based on the real events, as you said, I have fantasized it a bit and fictionalized it a bit and anthropomorphized it completely. And hence, we have Swan Song. And I'm just more thrilled with this book than, honestly, anything else I've ever produced. I really am.
Given the incredibly intense work you've been doing on the Land of the Free project and the battle to outlaw trophy hunting, I would imagine that writing Swan Song was a refreshing departure from the horrors you were dealing with. Am I right?
Absolutely. It was such a joy to be dealing with something that was so wholesome and pure and, you know, notwithstanding the aggressive male swan on the lake, basically a beautiful, uplifting and inspiring story in many, many ways. And yes, it was a real refreshing change for my soul to be involved in something beautiful as opposed to the unfortunate horror that I had been dealing with for many, many years in my very important, as you say, Land of the Free project.
If you were to sum up in a couple of sentences the key message that you want readers to get from your book, what would it be?
Listen to your parents. One of the key facts in this particular story is that the daughter of the reigning swans on our lake decided not to follow the ways of her kind. And that set a chain of events in motion that sparked some very dramatic and distressing events. And had she accepted the ways of her kind, none of that would have happened. Perhaps that's not the answer, but it's certainly one of them. Listen to your parents.
Now, I don't want to give away too much of the plot, but I was very impressed with some of the themes that I picked up on. I want to mention four of them to you. The first one is this. Good parents can still raise a child who turns out to be vindictive and treacherous. One of the characters in the book says that bad seeds can happen in even the best of families. That's very true, isn't it?
It's absolutely true, and it's not confined to the human race. It happens in all species. I mean, most animals don't demonstrate that particular quality, but now and again, even in the animal kingdom, it does happen that you get a bad seed. So yes, that's absolutely true.
The second theme I picked up on is the issue of bigotry directed towards immigrants. One of the beloved ducks, who is not native to the area, is referred to by the aggressive evil swan as a filthy immigrant. You were saying something there, weren't you?
I absolutely was. I need not have made that point in this story. I could have just treated him as any other native wildlife character in the story. But dear Lord Quacks-a-Lot, that is his name. That is what we call him. My mother actually named him that for obvious reasons. He's a non-native. And his couple of mates in the story were also non-native. They were actually dumped as unwanted pets by the giants, as I call them in the story, the human beings. And he is so beloved, and he's such an important character in real life on the lake, and certainly he's a massively important character in the story and Swan Song, that I thought it was the perfect opportunity to make the point about bigotry against immigrants who so often have so much to offer a community and are not always perhaps treated the way that they should be. And certainly under the law here in Australia, where wildlife are concerned, they're not. Because if a non-native animal is injured, animal control and animal welfare will not care for them.
That's terrible. Now, the third theme I picked up on is the concept of hostile takeovers and invasions leading to death and destruction. Obviously, that's a very timely theme given what's going on in the Ukraine, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, I didn't do that with the Ukraine in mind because this did actually happen. We have an island in the middle of the lake where some creatures called purple swamp hens reside, and they look like velociraptors. They honestly look like dinosaurs. They're small creatures, but they have massive claws and formidable beaks, and they've built little reed caves all over the reed island. And I've called it Swamp Hen Island in the story. And it is the central focus of the story. And this evil swan who I've named Hannibal did once, in reality, try an aggressive takeover of that island. And the swamp hens did, small as they are, they swarm, and they swarmed against him. It was quite something to behold. So just because you're bigger, Russia, doesn't always mean you're going to be victorious. It wasn't done deliberately, but yes, it fits.
And the fourth theme that I want to mention, Lynn, stems from a moment in the story when the animals vow that they will never accept the invading swan, Hannibal, as their king. And they go around chanting, "Not my king," which is eerily reminiscent of a time after the 2016 U.S. presidential election when millions of people were marching in protest chanting, "Not my president." The comparison
was deliberate.
The comparisons between Hannibal and that particular former president are rather compelling, don't you think?
Well, I wasn't trying in any way to compare Hannibal to the former president of the United States. Hannibal is Hannibal in his own right, and he has a very, very chilling personality. I mean, these animals absolutely have individual personalities, very individual personalities. But the chant of "Not my king," yes, I absolutely took that from "Not my president." In fact, I've listed some Easter eggs in the end of the book, and I've particularly identified that one as I got it from "Not my president." So in that respect, yes, it absolutely fits.
Lynn, in 2016, you suffered severe bilateral nerve damage in your arms, and you thought you'd never again sit down at a keyboard and write another book. But somehow, this story motivated you to get back to the keyboard and start typing. Congratulations, Lynn.
Thank you. It's been a monumental journey. Yes, I basically lost all of the year of 2016 in some very lengthy, very painful, very precarious surgeries on my arms, which has left me with some very impressive scars and rehabilitation and some mind-numbing pain management medication that really impaired my cognitive function. And I didn't know who I was going to be or what I was going to do at the end of this, because my life was between two keyboards, writing on the computer and playing on the piano. And I was in my doctor's surgery one day, and I can't remember what it was I said, but he looked me in the eye and he said, "That's depression." And I thought to myself, well, I am not going to go down that road. And the moment he said those words to me, and I was still halfway through the process at that time, I said, no, I'm going to reinvent myself and I'm going to pull myself out of this. And that's absolutely what I did. And I've gone on to produce other books and films. And as you've said, I've won awards all over the world. But I hadn't done any of the writing myself. I had hired ghosts and I'd managed them. And for me, that was a very frustrating process because nobody could really write in my voice. And nobody could write as fast as I wrote, which is part of the reason I got my arms in so much trouble in the first place. But when it came to Swan Song, it was such a personal story, and nobody knew the story or the personalities as well as I did. And I knew it had to be written in my voice. I just took a deep breath, and I have a split keyboard and a vertical mouse and arm braces, medication if I need it, but I actually weaned myself off all medication at the end of 2016. And I said, I have to do this one personally. And I have to tell you, Harvey, I am more proud of this book, this production, this story, more thrilled with it than honestly anything else I've done in my life.
Well, your pride is justified. It's really a delightful book. And as I said, I found four themes that resonated with me. There are probably many more. Now, tell us about your plans to make an animated musical feature film out of the book.
Well, this came through the people I'm involved with in my Land of the Free project. And of course, Priscilla has been a very close friend of mine for many, many years now. She's actually been to my home in Australia, and she's met and fed some of the main characters in the book. I've got photos of her doing it, which is very special. And she'd been following my blogs when the real saga was unfolding in 2018. And when I came up with the idea for the story, she said, "Oh my God, this is an animated musical." And I said, "Oh my God, you're right." I mean, Richard Loring, who you've interviewed, who is the creator of the international stage sensation African Footprint, said, "This could rival The Lion King. This absolutely in stage and film and merchandising and gaming and in every way, it could rival The Lion King. And nobody has ever, ever done anything like this with Black Swans." So Priscilla, of course, has her movie contacts. And I said, "Well, I don't think I'm the person to do an animated feature film screenplay, but I'm absolutely the person to write the young adult novel story of it. So let me do that." And I got in touch with Richard and with the Mazanza Youth Choir of Soweto, who, as you said, their main composer is Grammy nominated, and they won awards in their own right for the music on the Land of the Free project. And I said, "Are you interested in doing some music for this project, which is completely different?" And they loved it. They just so loved it. And they produced one of the songs immediately, which we're using as the background music for the book trailers, both live action and animated book trailers. And so we had a little bit of a team put together. Priscilla wants to EP it and Mazanzi want to do the music. And we have so much belief that this is going to be a phenomenal success on film, on stage. And first of all, we hope as a book.
I think it will. And I can't wait to attend the premiere of the movie and the stage musical. I think you're going to be eventually a Broadway sensation.
Well, we hope so. And we really believe so. The story lends itself to it. And there's already an international following from the people who were following the blogs back in 2018 and have been saying, "You know, we want this story. We want this story." And I'm like, "All right, it's coming. It's coming. I promise."
I understand you're donating 10% of your royalties from the sale of the book up until January the 1st, 2023 to World Animal Day, correct?
That's absolutely right. We're launching the book on October the 1st, which is World Animal Day and Francis of Assisi Day. And of course, with my long, well, lifetime history of supporting various animal causes and this being an animal story, I thought it was appropriate to connect those two events and launch it on World Animal Day. So I contacted those people and they're going to support me in announcing that on all of their social media. And I said, 10% of all of my royalties from launch day to New Year's Day, I'll be more than happy to donate to you, which is what I'm going to do.
I want our viewers to know that you can learn more about Lynn Santer, her films, books, and philanthropic work by going to her website, lynnsanter.com. And I encourage you all to pick up a copy of Swan Song. It will make the perfect Christmas gift for adolescents, teenagers, young adults, and frankly, any animal lover. Well, Lynn, thank you so much for opening our eyes to the secret life of swans and giving us all a chance to experience life in mermaid waters. I can't wait to come down there one day and see your gorgeous property and meet those beautiful swans.
Oh, well, I would love for you to do that, Harvey. All our visiting dignitaries come and meet the swans. And I must say, apropos of the Christmas presents, who doesn't want a book written by Santa for Christmas?
Ho, absolutely. Ho, ho. Santa Claus.
And it's available on Amazon, and it will have its own website up as of today, swanlakepress.com as well.
Swanlakepress.com. Well, Lynn, I wish you the best of luck with the book and the movie and the show. And I thank you so much for taking the time to appear on our show.
Thank you, Harvey. I'm very, very grateful. And I look forward to receiving comments and feedback from your viewers. I'll be happy to answer you all.
Our guest has been internationally acclaimed filmmaker, author, animal welfare advocate, and philanthropist, Lynn Santer, whose new book, Swan Song, is now available on Amazon. My name is Harvey Brownstone. Thank you to our producer, Steve Silver. Thank you all for joining us. See you next time.
Thanks for watching. Be sure to check out all the great interviews on the Harvey Brownstone Interviews YouTube channel. Don't forget to subscribe and ring the bell to be notified when new videos are posted.